Hello, everyone. I'm Elena Armijo, and I'm the founder of the C-Suite Collective. This is a company I created for executive leadership coaching and wellness that supports C-suite executives, entrepreneurs, and founders. We support modern companies committed to fostering diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, holistic organizational growth, and generational impact for years to come. Now, more than ever, businesses are running faster and with fewer resources. Burnout, overwhelm, disconnection, and disillusionment are the new norm for teams struggling with an old paradigm. At the C-Suite Collective, we believe deeply that providing massive support for your teams through executive coaching and holistic practices will create an inclusive culture, higher levels of performance, sustainable change, and the organizational impact you desire. You can find us at the c-suitecollective.com. How can someone learn more about their blind spots? We'll take a look at that in our coaching tip for the week. Today for our interview segment, we have Jason Frizzell, who is an executive coach and facilitator serving high-impact people and teams in the technology space. He's also a personal brand strategist for CEOs, executives, entrepreneurs, and side hustlers. I hope you enjoy the episode today, and remember, something powerful resides within you. I'm here to support you in seeing it and creating it. So today we're talking about how can someone learn more about their blind spots? I think the most logical place to start in this conversation would be, what is a blind spot? So, of course, I went to the dictionary to get a true definition here, and it's described as, or defined as, an area where a person's view is obstructed. So when I first learned about blind spots, I learned about them through driving, which most of us do. My dad would always be really clear and say, make sure to check your blind spots. Make sure to check that rearview mirror and see if you can see anything. And if you can't, trust that you can't see something because it's in your blind spot. And that concept to me was always a bit foreign. And of course, you know, like many people, I had to learn that I did have a blind spot and I had to trust that I might not always know what was there. I think it's such a great metaphor for what we're talking about today. Another way of thinking about blind spots is through a main grouping that can be described as unconscious judgments that people might have. This can be through personality, visible characteristics, culture, organizational structure, and behavior. These are some of the areas that people typically don't know they have blind spots in, and they're surprised when they learn they do. So the way I like to think about this today is breaking it down into three different areas. The first is understanding the nature of blind spots. And this is the idea that blind spots are not just limited to driving, right? They exist in all aspects of our lives. Communication, decision-making, self-awareness. These are some of the examples I'm thinking about. And the opportunity is to explore what a blind spot is, how they develop, and why they persist. And this is really valuable for our growth in human development and behavior. So discussing the psychological mechanisms behind blind spots can really help one to start to recognize and address them more effectively. So even having this conversation is a great place to start. The second thing I would recommend is explore the impact of your blind spots. So blind spots can have a profound effect on relationships, on teamwork, and really on you, your personal growth. And if we choose to remain unaware of what they are or even acknowledging that they exist, like that car, then we have some accidents that happen, just like car wrecks. And inadvertently, they hinder your own progress or they contribute to misunderstandings and conflicts that you may not know you had a hand in. So I think exploring what is impacting you around yourself is one of the first key pieces to learning what they are. And then some strategies for identifying and addressing your blind spots. You know, there's lots of strategies out there, but I think the first one that I would recommend is seek some feedback from others. So exploring techniques such as mindfulness, active listening, and perspective taking can also expand your awareness. And if anything, you get to be in connection and conversation about it, which I have always learned and grown from whenever I open up a conversation to other people. So I'd like to provide a couple more resources around this in case you're interested in expanding your conversation more. The first recommendation I have is to sign up for a daily newsletter called the Anti-Racism Daily by Nicole Cardoza. I get emails daily that have me think about questions that come through my inbox to see, is this something I'm aware of? Have I thought about things from this angle? And I highly recommend it. It's simple and easy to read, and it has you already in a state of new awareness every day. There's also a book called Blind Spot, Hidden Biases of Good People. And this is by Anthony Greenwald and Mazarin Banaji. I believe that's how you pronounce it. And this book is really great because it just takes out some of the stigma that blind spots are bad. And it starts with the foundational piece of we all have them. So let's all start talking about them. I also recommend Neurotribes by Steve Stilberman. This is another book that really opened up expansive thinking around neurodivergence and what's out there in the world, which I had a lot of blind spots around when I first started working in the coaching world. And another favorite is How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram Kendi. So those are some resources to start and to get you curious and just opening up to what might I be missing or not seeing in my awareness. Jason, thank you so much. Welcome to the show. I am very excited to have you here. I always like to tell people one of my first memories of the people that I'm interviewing. And, you know, yours is a bit fuzzy. Well, I can't exactly remember the exact time, but I feel like it was in passing. You know, so for everybody listening, like Jason and I did the same coach training program, and he is a masterful coach, which we're going to get into in a minute. But I remember hearing of you before I met you. And so this was also, you know, a bit different because what I heard was how incredibly powerful you were with your reflections, your dry wit and sense of humor, but how much you loved transformational work and how effective you were in all the rooms with other leaders. So I just, I remember the first time I met you, I was very excited to just say, what's up? And it's really, I've heard so much about your legacy. So thank you so much for being here.
Yeah. Wow. That, I will say, whoever you heard that from should probably tell me those things because I've never heard those from anybody. But isn't that the way it always
that
goes?
That is the way it always goes. It's so true.
You're like, wow, that is so kind. I'm pretty sure nobody that you know and that you and I know in common ever actually said that about me. Or if they do, they don't actually say it to your face, which is such a good lesson in life to be like, well, what if we just told people how we feel about them? But thank you. I hope to live up to those things. I would, you know, like to be totally honest with you, I hear that. I go, who, me? Not me. That's not me. But that's just my own bullshit talking, which we'll talk about more of today. But thank you, Elena. I think I, can I also return the
please,
favor?
Sure.
Yeah. I think the first time we met was, I believe, on a Zoom right after the pandemic hit. I believe that's my recollection. And you were running a call, one of the calls. And I remember we were all in this new world. It was like March of 2020 or maybe April of 2020. We were like, hey, remember all the ways we used to do these things? We're doing none of those things this way anymore. Like we're still doing like all the way we used to run this coach training program. No, that's all out the window. We had to adapt in like, I don't know, a week.
And boy.
And we were both in New York at the time. I believe this is when you were still in New York. Yeah, it's crazy.
Adapt as we
crazy.
Did. Well, I'm so grateful that you want to be here.
Adapt we did.
You have such a beautiful spirit and presence of mind. So thanks for being with us. And I want to get right in by just asking you a little bit about your journey. So how'd you become a coach? What'd you do before? How are we here?
Let's see. I'll start with what I did before because I'm a chronological kind of person. So I like to say I'm a recovering salesperson, but I'm actually still a salesperson. I love sales. I love sales. I started working in, I guess my first real sales job was a sophomore in college where I was selling something for commission. And that was, I went to the University of Minnesota, go Gophers, big old school. And I worked at the school newspaper and I sold ads in the school newspaper. And I loved it because I love winning and I love closing deals. And so that's where I think I got my start in sales. But even prior to that, I've been working almost 40 hours a week since I was 16. I always like to work. I like to hustle. And so I did that. And then I went into sales in college. I did some more selling work. And then because of my personality at 22-year-old self, and maybe still me today, I decided I needed to get a job the day after I graduated from college, my full-time job. So this whole level, this whole idea of like a skip year or take some time to figure out, nope. So I went right into my first sales job. I worked at a telecommunications company and I worked straight through until June of 2019. I mean, yes, of course, I had vacations, but no time, no real time off. And I worked in sales. I worked in technology sales. I did work at a couple of really large companies. I can name them. It was Nextel, became Sprint Nextel, which is now T-Mobile, which is hilarious because I worked at a T-Mobile store in college. And then I also worked at AT&T, which is like working to the federal government, huge company. And then I decided, you know what? I don't like big companies, but I still like hustling. So I went and I did a bunch of startup work, worked in sales and mostly technology, but I also worked at an e-commerce platform for a little while in New York City. And that was my what I did prior to running my own business. Mm-hmm. Second question, how did I become a coach? Well, I took an improv class. That's the truth. Amazing. I took an improv. Totally. And I will never forget this. And I won't mention her name, but I owe a lot to her. I believe you definitely know her. So I go and I remember saying to my wife, I'm like, I'm kind of bored. And we live in New York City, obviously tons of improv ideas. I'm like, I've always wanted to take an improv class. It's fun. I think it's a good sales skill. And that was it. It was like good sales skill, something to do. And I walk in and I'm in level zero at the place called The Pit, People's Improv Theater in Midtown. And it was just a bunch of people who had no clue what they're doing, which is arguably the best improv because it's kind of like the best coaching. We don't actually know what you're doing. You're just being yourself as opposed to like, here's the rules you have to follow. And I remember during the break, our teacher, she said, hey, by the way, if anybody's also interested and wants to talk sometime, I also do coaching. And I remember, I'll never forget this. I remember exactly where I was. I remember the classroom in Midtown. I remember thinking to myself, I'm like, I don't know what that means because I never had anybody coach me in my work. I never hired anybody externally. I didn't really know what that meant, but I'm like, oh, that sounds interesting. So I'm like, hey, like, let me book a call with you. And we did a call. I remember her saying to me, so what is it you really want? And I'm like, oh shit. I have no fucking idea. Like, I don't know what I want. And I ended up having a powerful conversation. It's probably like conversations you've had with some of your clients where people are like, nobody's really actually asked me what I actually want, right? Exactly. Like it's always like in the context of what do you need for work or something more tactical. And I remember saying to her, I don't know. I just know I'm bored. I know I have this feeling there's something more for me. So I had a powerful conversation with her, hired her. Turns out she went through the same coach training program that you and I went through. About 7 months into our engagement, I remember we were talking about what's next for me. And I said, you know, I love people. Like this coaching thing seems like it could be a thing that I could be interested in. And of course, the old me was like, because it'd be good in sales. That's what I think is like, it'd be good
because
in sales.
I can do sales.
To have coaching skills. So then, because I could do sales and I could like persuade people easier with all these Jedi mind tricks. And I remember her saying, hey, you should check out coach training program. And I went to an in-person observation in New York City and was pretty much already in. And then I signed up and then I started my coach training in February of 2019. And halfway through that program, because it's me, I started a side hustle very quickly and terribly coached a few people. Like looking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, what was I doing? But I had a couple people that I got a couple people to pay me something. And then I remember that I decided to turn my side hustle into full-time and went out and did it and had all sorts of trials and tribulations, both internally and externally, learned a lot about myself. And as they say on Seinfeld, if you're a Seinfeld fan, yada, 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 here we are today. There's a lot in the yada, yada, yada there, but that is how I became a coach. That's how I became a coach. And I'm sure if I was to talk to some of your clients, a lot of coaches become coaches because they hire a coach and they're like, oh, wow, this is really meaningful work.
Yeah.
Which is so cool.
It is.
And that's my experience. And I've had a couple of folks I've coached who have also become coaches. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. I have that experience as well. And my story, as you know, was a bit different where I would never intended to become a coach, but ended up falling in love with it. I took the coach training program just to see if I could like get as many tools as possible for myself. I thought, well, I should just go straight to the source if I'm going to try to fix myself, which is a story for another day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think you're a fabulous leader and a fabulous coach. And so I wanted to have you on the show to hear how you're thinking about the world right now. Mm-hmm. And one of the conversations you and I have been in amongst many, thank you for having me as a guest on your podcast. So everybody should check out Talking to Cool People.
Yes, you're very welcome.
Where you'll hear another conversation of Jason.
Yes, thank you.
Is this idea around men right now and the identity that's shifting for men in the world. A lot of the work I do has to do with inclusion and belonging in leaders, specifically with men in particular. I am very curious about what you're noticing shifting in terms of identity, midlife crisis. These are some of the conversations that I know you've been in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start with my own personal experience because that's the thing I can obviously speak to the best. And then I will, if you'd be okay, I'm going to expand it to conversations I have with clients and, or not clients, as friends.
Yeah.
So the truth is, and I mentioned this briefly, but that whole story about going to improv was when my daughter was about two, I was about 40. So some could say, hey, it's a midlife crisis. I don't know if I love that term because it didn't feel like a crisis. It felt like a reckoning of who I really wanted to be in the world. And so for me, the conversation with myself was, well, what do I know outside of getting up, going to work, being a dad, being a husband, and doing it all over again every single day? Is this what I want? Is this my life? And yes, I want the dad and I want the husband. But I think I always had a calling for more from the kind of work I did than just grinding it out in sales. So I was like, anybody who asked me, I said, I like my sales career, but there's only two things I liked about it. I call it the two P's. I like the paycheck and the people.
Nice.
That was it. Didn't care about what I was selling. I like the companies, but companies are just people. It's just organizations made up of people. I really enjoyed most of the people I worked with. I had some fantastic bosses, made good money, sold some good stuff, had a lot of success, but I just never felt like I was making a difference. And I didn't know how to say that then. Like if you were talking to me 6 years ago, Jason, I wouldn't know how to describe this. Now I can see it wasn't what I was meant to do here. Like I think we have our form and we have our function. And for me, the impact has been to get really clear about what's true for me. For me, not what's true for the world, not what I believe from my childhood, not what I'm told in the media or taking a course where they say this is how you become a more masculine man and, you know, 10x your output, all those things. There's nothing wrong with any of those things. It's just not my style. And at the time, that was my style. Like, oh, how do you, it's like performance type of things. And just like really leaning into what I would say is more the feminine side of the feeling and the emotion of like, hey, what's actually, how does this feel? How does it feel to be on this podcast? How does it feel to be leaving my corporate job to do this? And less of the like, how do I make more money or how do I do the thing? And yeah, there's still a lot of that goes on for me. Like that's, I would never take that away. And I love making money. I love doing sales. But the identity shift that I've really had is, it's been pretty fascinating, Elena. My experience, and this is my experience alone, is the more fun I'm having, the more successful I am, which is, for me, my core thing is to have fun in any area of my life, whether it be parenting, marriage, business, friendships, whatever it is. I just love to have fun. Like, I think everybody likes to have fun, but I really like to have fun. And what's been really awesome about the last 5 years for me that's been a huge transformation in AHA is I can literally show you my finances and I can tell you when I've had the most fun. And it's not because I'm having a lot of fun and the finances go up, not if the finances go up and then it's more fun, which is really fascinating for me, which was a complete shift from how it went for me previous, which is why I can say with confidence that that's the shift I've made is like, hey, if you go with what's true for you and you have fun, it's likely going to work out versus like bust your ass and then it can be fun once you're done busting your ass. So that's the shift I've had, which could be in an hour from now. Like, who? None of us know, right? Like that could be 50 years from now, or it could be tomorrow, today.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As opposed to people who wait until the end of their careers to have fun or to think about what is true for me. That's a conversation that some people, I think, attend to many times during their lives, but then especially in transitions or retirement. So I love that you got ahead of that or had it right on time, whoever's definition you're going by.
Yeah.
And what shifted for you as you stepped more into, you said you stepped into more feminine feeling-based emotions or a way of viewing it. Those are my words, not yours. So thank you for sticking with me. But what I'm curious about, what has that opened up or made possible for you?
Yeah. And just for everybody listening, this is a very much a work in progress. Depending on the day and the time and how I'm like, what's going on for me, this is a sliding scale at all times. Like I think it is for most people, but not to say I have it figured out, but how it's made a difference for me is it's less exhausting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I have a high engine. If you point me at something, I can generally knock down that wall or crush it, but I might completely obliterate myself doing it. So I just have a high engine. I know that I have a high drive. It's actually drive is one of my essence words. That first coach gave me my essence words. I was actually in there and I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. And it's less tiring. And it's also the experience I have is freedom, because I actually get to be myself. And one of the things that I always felt in my corporate career was that I had to play a very specific role. And that role, looking back, would be nice, easy to get along with, super reliable, knock down the brick walls to get it done, but you have to be extremely likable, because if you're not, then people won't buy from you. So I had as we would call in coaching, I had a context, or people would say, I had a story about how I needed to be in the world. And the shift is that, and I know you and I have talked about this on my podcast, is I get to be more myself. And I don't always want to be the most likable person. Like I want to be liked, but there's times where I'm like, I'd rather share my truth. That's much more fulfilling for me. And so there's been that. The other part about working on the feminine part of the energy, and for those listening who, I just wanted to define this, it doesn't mean becoming actually more feminine. It's just like the more of the less get it done, black and white. Guessing most people have probably studied that, or listener, or some have anyway, is that I get to be more present as a husband and a father, because the kids we have young kids, they don't care about like what did dad do today.
Sure.
Like a 3-year-old is not like, oh, how many clients did you coach today? Like they could care less. They're like, oh, is daddy with me and are we having fun? So I actually get to be present with that versus distracted. And with my wife, and we've been married for 14 years now, almost 15, is just like to be present for her without like constantly being in operational mode, which is easy to do with two young kids and two working parents at home. We have a big life, and being able to be like, hey, like we could slow down a little bit. So it's been a very freeing and fun experience. And there are times where I catch myself and I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah.
What am I doing? Like there, I don't have time for any of this crap. Like where it's like the old mechanism is like, no, this isn't that valuable. Go and get like, you need to go make some more money, or you need to go and do this thing, or you have emails to do. And it's normal. Like, but the other thing I'll wrap with this is relating to whatever comes up as normal versus something to fix, which is a newer thing for me in probably the last 6 months. I credit my coach, my therapist, some internal work, and just other places where I'm in spaces where it's okay to be me and be like, you know what, dude, like that's cool that you're feeling that way. There's nothing wrong with it. 'Cause it used to be the story I had for a long time was, if I'm not moving something forward, there's something wrong with me, because that's how you make money in sales and that's how you keep your job and have success. And you don't really have time to mess around. It's like the old, what is it? There's no crying in baseball type of thing from the Tom Hanks movie. It's like, yeah, like there's no time for that stuff. Just move it forward. And so it's just a lot more freeing. I feel like I get to be more of me in the world.
That's amazing. And I love that you said, you're being really clear that it's not about being masculine or feminine per se. And even for those, again, who are not familiar with this concept, that we both have a masculine and feminine side in us. But what I really hear is happening that is that we're even raising out of that conversation into a conversation where you're balanced and there's a balance within yourself. Yeah. And that's been something we've been exploring in non-binary conversations, right? How that lens is so easily accessible to people who are non-binary because they relate to themselves as whole and that there's just things that might need more balance in one area or others. And so it's really interesting to hear your experience of that through what you've been through.
Yeah. Thanks, Leda. Yeah. I think what I would say about my journey over the last, it's been 5.5 years now, is if you would have told me what I'd be doing 5 years ago and you told me today, I'd be like, what are you like? No, it'd be like an impossibility in my mind. Like, that's not what I'm going to do or how I'm going to be. So it's been quite a journey for sure.
Awesome. Well, the next question I have for you is around how that's translated into running your own business now. Because I've heard a little bit about how much you love sales, how much you were driving, and then how much you shifted in that arena. We're not gonna call it a midlife crisis because it wasn't. It was a midlife shift, we'll say.
Yeah, maybe. That's good. Yeah, shift. It's a shift. Yeah.
Shift, exactly. And so how is that informed now how you are creating your business from here?
Yeah. Briefly, there's a future-based conversation, future-based question. I want to just very briefly mention one thing. Running my own business after working for 20 years for other people was a very traumatic experience for me because it poked at a lot of my identity. Because I got paid before to sell things that were not me. They were products. And then when I had to start selling my own, like, it was just me. Like, that's it. You're like, you pay me for my time. And I'm talking when I first started out. And I got a no. It hurt really badly because my identity was all wrapped around being liked, making money. And I could not, when I first started, I could not separate those out. Like, it took me a while to have that shift between, oh, this is different. Because I related to it as it's the same thing. Oh, it's the same thing as selling a piece of software, except this time you're just selling coaching, but people should buy it because it's valuable and blah, 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 blah. And you're valuable because you know what you're doing. So I just want to say for anybody listening, it's been tough. Mm. I had a lot, my therapist will tell you, I've had a lot of conversations like, what are all the things that I made this mean about me? And it still comes up for me. Because it's old habits die hard. And like part of that identity, I think, is what makes me great at what I do. But also, I just know that part. But it's kind of goes back to like the falling in love with all parts of yourself and knowing that can also be a force for power. So that's, you know, I just want to put that out there for anybody listening that it's been tough mentally, emotionally. I had probably the most down I'd ever been was about 1.5 years into my business in my whole life. Just like, I'm just like this, I'm not feeling good. I'm not successful, had a lot of stories. So just to put that out there, I'd say how I design my business now is it's pretty simple. And I know I'm privileged to say this, that it's simplistic, but is the opportunity fun or is the person going to be fun to work with? And if the answer is yes, I generally will work with them. And if I get a sense for, and when I say fun, I'm well aware not everything is always fun. It's not about always fun. It's like, is the general experience. So like people approach me with partnerships or, you know, it's similar to some work you do, like offer opportunities to go and speak places or facilitate things. You're like, ooh, does it excite me to be in that room with these people? And if the answer is no, I actually will turn things away. Me 3 years ago would never do that. Because we need to like make sure our business is successful. So I try to run it that way. It's not perfect, but I would say the general experience of my business is really fun. It's the same with my podcast.
Mm.
Would I have an hour having fun talking to this cool person? If so, probably a yes. So for anybody who wants to come on my podcast, it's likely I'll say yes if we think we're fun. Like it's that kind of that simple.
Yeah.
And in some ways, Elena, it's a really easy and cool, it's a cool filter for me. Because when I trust my intuition and my feeling about it, it's almost never wrong. when I get up in my head about like, well, all the extraneous things that goes on around it is generally where I twist myself up. And then I won't say I make mistakes, but I maybe don't trust my intuition as much and end up doing something or being like, the best example would be like a one-on-one client where I'm like, this is not a good fit, but I like them to hire me because I want to win or I like to make money. And I think all entrepreneurs out there can identify with this. And then you like end up in on a Zoom call and you're like, I'm not enjoying this experience. And I don't think they are either. That's like the thing is like, they're not either.
Yeah.
So that's generally how I do things now. And then the second part of that is, and I learned this from Tim Ferriss. He had a thing he once said where he was writing Tools of Titans and his coach said to him, his coach was, I think, Jerry Colonna, very famous executive coach. And he was like, I can't do this book. It's too hard. And Jerry's like, well, what if it wasn't hard? So a lot of times I'll ask myself, well, what if it was fun? What if your experience of this group you're facilitating with, or what if this client isn't fun? What could you own about making it fun? Where are you not making it fun for yourself? Which is then that vibe and that spirit to others. As I hear myself say this, I feel a little like, oh, it's a little pie in the sky. Yeah, there are some people I just don't want to work with. Like, it's just like, they're just not for me. But I found that being able to own my experience of getting what I want has changed everything for me in my business and using that as a filter.
That's really beautiful.
Is it fun?
Thanks for sharing that.
Is it enjoyable?
What I hear is your values, actually. I hear the values are lining up now and some of the work you did before. And thank you for sharing so vulnerably about the traumatic piece of it too, because I think a lot of people in entrepreneur land and leadership land think, oh, I should have all the answers. I've gotten here. I've done the thing. And they're on the other side of that, there's so much more to go through. And so I'm glad you're laughing at that too, right? Like, I made it. I have my own business.
Or I'm a leader now. Yeah, you're like, hilarious. You're like, uh-huh.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, all is good. These are the same people who end up like burnt out or laid off. And they go like, and then they're like, oh, I got laid off. And I'm like, and they're like, oh, it's no surprise. I hated my life. Yeah, they probably sense that. And that's one of the reasons you got laid off, right? Because they could sense it.
Exactly.
Your company could sense it.
Exactly. So I'm just so appreciative of that work that you did. And I'm wondering, how do you continue to grow now? Even with your values so centered, your boundaries so centered, that's really what I'm hearing in how you're setting up your business. What was the next level of evolution for you? And not because it's the next level, but because it's something that you found interesting and fascinating about yourself.
I think the next level for me is men's work. I think I was sharing with you, I just got back from a retreat from some people we know together. And it was a really incredible experience. And I've never been in a space with that many men doing having the sort of conversations we're having and the displays of emotion. And no, it was not a bunch of men weeping for 3 days. That's not what we did. But it was like, you and I were talking about this. It's funny. It's like what we did for those 3 days is what I believe women do all the time. Like get together over a cocktail or whatever and like talk about how they feel about things and stories and all these. And like guys were like, no, we're good. At least I'm speaking for no, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good. It's great over here. It's so good.
Yeah.
And we got a chance to do that. So I really want to get more into men's work. And I don't mean only coaching men. I love coaching women. I love women. I have a daughter and a wife and I have a lot of women clients, but like really being like hopefully modeling vulnerability for men to show that you can do that. And still like, I relate to myself as quite masculine. I'm pretty alpha male. And like you get to have both.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I'm working on now is taking a look at my spirituality. And that includes potentially some plant medicine type of things and like working on more of a connection to my spirituality, both from my childhood, which is a specific context. Like I grew up Lutheran in Minnesota. I love that. But also like getting really connected to nature and plant medicine and all that, but doing it in a way that feels authentic to me. So I don't end up like, I'm not going to be the guy who's going to be in the Amazon rainforest, like telling you about life coaching you from like a treehouse. That's like not my vibe, but how can I incorporate those things in and explore those things in a way that's meaningful to me? So that's sort of like what I see is what's next. And then continue to lean into feminine energy. Like, how do I actually feel about this thing? How am I more mindful about the experience I'm having as opposed to go, 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 drive, drive, drive?
Hmm.
And Yeah, being more at peace.
So the question that I want to ask you that I ask everybody who comes on is what the generic question is, where do you hope to see the world, you know, over the next year? But really what I'm wondering with you is where do you hope to see this grow? You know, do you have a vision for men's work? Do you have a vision for plant medicine and what it would provide the world if more people were doing this?
Men and therapy and coaching or men's work or just like the 78% of, you know, like 78% of the coaching industry is women. I don't know if that's still true, but just the opportunity for men to like do this in their own way that would make such a difference. Like I said, for the women in our lives, if you're married to a woman or you're with a woman or your kids or just the world. Yeah, I'm going to talk about that.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I love that what's possible for everybody from there. Like if you were to say on the other side of that, what do you see? What is that?
Yeah. So what's possible for the world if more men, and I have some ideas and opinions on how men can be better, for sure. I've mentioned some of them, and you mentioned some of them too, coaching, therapy, group work, being willing to have real conversations with guys above the surface level, which I love having surface level conversations, no problem. I love that. But willing to connect on a little bit deeper basis. What's possible is to be seen and to be heard. And if anybody's ever read, you know, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, I think those are two of the things, universal things about them as a human thing. But some things that are very specific to men, I think, are being acknowledged, being feeling validated, being valued. And what would it be like if you were able to walk around this planet and feel and genuinely feel that way? Either from your boss, from your significant other, from your children. And what would it be like for those people on the other side? So for those men who are listening, married to a woman or a man, it doesn't really matter, or doesn't matter who you're married to. What would it be like for your significant other to have you more empowered and more comfortable with who you are, to be able to have the conversations that you know need to be had? And for parents, how many kids do you know that say, well, I grew up in a house where we really never talked about our feelings, or we really never talked that much about these things because it just wasn't the way we did it. And then they come out into the world and that's all they know. So they do the same thing. And then they have children. And yes, you can break that cycle, but it's not always the way it goes. And I just think there would be so much possibility. And this is universal for women and men too, but I just think women just naturally have a little bit easier time, and it's more socially acceptable, at least in the United States and in North America, to share a little more vulnerably. And men, how would it feel if you walked into your office and said, last week was rough and I wasn't sure that I did a good job? How do you all feel? And like actually do that as opposed to having to thump our chest and say how everything is great and how we got it all covered. There is a time and a place for that, for sure. But to be able to be more vulnerable in all the spaces that we inhabit, I think there's so much possibility. The ability to say you're sorry, the ability to admit mistakes, and the ability to admit that men have needs too. I think that's, at the end of the day, what it comes down to is most men, myself included, are pretty terrible about asking for our needs or even acknowledging that we have them. Because we're trained not to. We're trained to provide. We're trained to do this. And I think there's so much value for, so that the world can meet our needs too. And it's reciprocal.
Yeah.
I know you have a significant other. Like, amazing. You get to hear what, And that's the thing that I would want to leave the audience with is for any men listening or men who are with other men or women that are listening, encourage your dude to do something different than just having to be an alpha male dude in the world. And I say this speaking to myself from 5 years ago, or maybe even 3 years ago, like there's more to it and it's much more enjoyable if this resonates for you. So that's what I would say.
That's a brilliant answer. Thanks for that. Because what I'm also looking at is all the women in the world who are doing the work to look at how far it's swung in the other direction, where you are not listening to men, or you're making them wrong, or you're shaming them, or you're bringing things to the table where it's not safe for men to have needs. and not in opposition to yours or at the expense of yours, but really in a way that has us responsible for what's been created together. So thanks for being a champion.
Oh, I love that.
Jason. Yeah.
Yeah. Elena, I'll leave with this. I know we're wrapping up. I love the idea of, it's kind of like when we talk about like an abundance mindset, and it's abundance of mindset where we can actually all get our needs met. Like, it's not a scarcity. Yeah. It's not that my wife and I can't both have our needs met. We both can. Mm-hmm. That's so, man, what would the world be like? That'd be unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, right? And it's going to take something. It's going to take us all messing up and trying over again and again and again instead of just pretending that the conversation doesn't exist anymore. So thanks for being on the forefront of that, Jason.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here with the listeners and sharing a little bit about you and everything you're up to.
My pleasure.
It's really beautiful.
So good to be here, Elena. I really, really appreciate the invite. It was an awesome conversation. You rock. You keep up doing the great work with the podcast, the C-Suite Collective, and all the amazing work you do with men and women leaders and everything in between. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.